Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
"I found Nirvana! I win!"
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keiser here with you on this Monday morning. And we go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. Gentry, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm good. Good to be with you guys.
You got to share a press box all weekend with Rex Road. How was that? How'd that go?
Yeah, I sure did. Three days over at Hawkins. It was at least we didn't have any rain delays this time. I remember a regional last year. I was there about 4 or 5 hours with him and Stillman, which is both entertaining and exhausting.
No doubt, man. But you did have a cicada that came and died, but then got like resurrected in front of you yesterday.
Yeah. I don't know what that means. It's not good.
I don't know what that means either.
It's not good. Gentry, our question of the day for the Tennessee Titans. I'm interested to get your viewpoint on it. What would you consider to be success for Brian Callahan in year one as Titans head coach? You can take that for the record. You can take it for Will Levis, whatever you want to take it. But what is success for Brian Callahan in year one?
I think the easiest answer to me would be making the playoffs. I mean, that would be a success to me. But I think you could look at it any number of ways in terms of, you know, is there progress? Are things moving in the right direction? You know, you look at a team like let's say the Colts last year, you know, would you view that as a success? Because they got, you know, they're right on the line for the playoffs. There's a lot of improvement, but you still don't really know what you have with Anthony Richardson if you're the Colts. So I think you got to look at Will Levis and say, you know, the fact that they were able to get more out of him last year was probably the best aspect of last season. So is it a success to keep him going, to know that you have that franchise quarterback? I mean, there's a lot of aspects there, but to me, for any NFL season, if you want the simple answer, your success is making the playoffs.
Yeah, I think definitely that's what you don't want is like the Colts thing where the most important person is not participating most of the year. So here's a hypothetical we threw out, Gentry. Titans go 9-8, get into the playoffs, get a wild card, but you know, maybe let's say it's like a so-so year. It's like the defense is good. You leave the year still TBD on Levis, or like 6-11. But he's great. You know, maybe the defense is bad, but he's great, and he is sort of giving you that certainty that he will be the guy. Which would be the better outcome for the Titans?
It's a good question. I mean, I think obviously you would rather see Levis be what you hope he's going to be, and what there were signs that last year that he will be. That's probably the better scenario to me. But I think this is going to be a lot different from what we've been used to with the Titans this season. I think that, you know, it used to be you could kind of know what to expect in a lot of these games, the kind of way they were going to play. You're going to run Derrick Henry 25 times. You're going to do a, you know, play a very physical brand of football, try to get the lead in the fourth quarter and do it that way. This could be a little different in terms of offensive football. I think this could be, you know, the offensive stats could be a lot better this season, and the Titans as a whole may not be better this season. But at the same time, I think there's reason to look at the defense and say, okay, well, they should be better in these key areas, and, you know, maybe the scores aren't 40-37 every single week. So, you know, in the past, I think we had a pretty good measuring stick of what to expect going into games just because Vrabel liked to play a certain way, and that's just kind of how it went. It's going to be a lot different this year. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in terms of, you know, what's the Titans' identity in winning games? Are they going to try to outscore people, or are they going to maintain a level of physicality and do it that way? And it's kind of a long-winded answer, but I think it kind of ties into what you're asking in terms of how do you feel good about what you're seeing?
Gentry, how do you view the Tavondre Sweat pick in terms of the talent that is pretty clearly there? There's the DWI stuff. There's also the weight concerns heading into camp and this season coming up. So there's a lot around it. But overall, how do you view the pick, and what kind of player do you think he can be if everything works out for him?
I like Sweat. I didn't necessarily like the pick where it happened, just because I feel like and the Titans only had one pick on that second day, so maybe you're reaching a little bit for the quote-unquote run stopper in the middle of the D-line. Usually you don't necessarily have to spend a high second-round pick on that guy. But I say some of the concerns, I get the concerns in terms of conditioning and weight and all that, but they don't just give out the Outland Trophy to any player in college football. This guy is an awfully good player. It was an awfully good player in college, and I think I like the upside there. I saw enough of him with what he did at Texas to think he's going to be a productive NFL player. And I think in talking to Joe about that this weekend, I feel like playing next to Jeffrey Simmons is going to be a big deal for him. I like adding him next to the leader of the team in a lot of ways, certainly of the defense with the Titans. I think it'll be real good for him to play next to Jeffrey Simmons. I think he's going to be a productive player.
So Gentry, Vanderbilt, huge win yesterday that they badly need. I mean, they are counting the wins to try to get in the tournament, which is wild to think of, but that's where they are. I left this weekend, Tennessee. I assume they'll keep their number one ranking. I mean, they're right there. I do wonder a little bit after watching the Vols if they have enough pitching. But what's your diagnosis of both these teams right now coming out of the weekend?
Yeah, I'd say that the weekend didn't really move the needle in what you where kind of each of them were coming into this. It was a huge win for Vanderbilt yesterday. Had they gotten swept again by Tennessee, and you're sitting here saying, and now the streak's at 10 in a row, they would have lost, I think, 8 SEC games in a row at that point. And I'm not sure they get it back next weekend in Kentucky. That you could have been looking at a scenario where a team that had been to 17 straight NCAA regionals wasn't going to make it this year. And, it's still a bit of a question, which is strange. You're not used to that with Vanderbilt. But that's a team that, I think the problem's been clear all year with Vandy, and that they can't really hit the ball out of the ballpark. They don't have a lot of pop in their lineup. And, you actually need to score more runs to win games. It's not a problem for Tennessee most days. Heck of a lineup there. But like say, Joe, I think that the pitching, despite the numbers, their pitching numbers are good and have been good all year. But when you look at Tennessee, the pitching depth does scare you. You had two guys throwing yesterday who made multiple appearances over the course of the weekend. They don't seem to have a ton of guys that they trust in terms of coming in and out of the bullpen in tight situations, and that's the thing that can get you beat in a regional. You need some pitching depth. I think for Tennessee, getting A.J. Russell back will be key. He was the guy they expected to be the ace of the rotation this year. He's been out a couple of months, but you keep hearing, he's close to coming back. Tennessee needs that. They need another starter, I think, to meet the potential that this team has, which is to make another run to Omaha and have a shot to win the whole thing.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessean with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Gentry, on the Vanderbilt front, they were so dominant for so long under Tim Corbin, and it does feel like the last couple of years here they've been kind of caught here, both here locally with Tennessee and really in the national scale as well. So how do you view kind of where the program is with the landscape changing, as we know, in college sports, and where Tim Corbin and Vanderbilt go from here as they try to, as you said, kind of scratch and claw their way into the tournament again this year? How do they get back to being the Vanderbilt program that we've been used to seeing?
They've been passed by Tennessee.
Yeah.
You just say it the last few years. I mean, it's been, and not just head-to-head. We're talking about Tennessee went to Omaha last year, and they're number one in the country right now. I mean, they're doing a good job over in Knoxville right now. As far as Vanderbilt, You know, I think there's been a lot of doom and gloom over the program this year, and I think there's been a steady regression in terms of the talent level. You're not seeing Justin Martins and J.J. Bleday. They don't have those guys right now. Pitching wise, I felt pretty good about their pitching staff coming into this year. When you looked at the number of experienced arms they had, and they brought in some pretty talented freshmen. I felt like they had a pitching staff that, quite honestly, I think is underachieved. It's not been as good as it was expected to be. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. They've had a lot of injuries and other things. But I think that's been the disappointing aspect of this. But I think it's also where Vanderbilt could be scary if they get into the postseason in the right situation. Because unlike what we're saying about Tennessee, I feel like Vanderbilt in a regional has a lot of arms. And a lot of, you know, they had – three good starts this week. Even though they lost two games to Tennessee, I felt like the starting pitching was good in all three games. And they bring in a starter in Devin Fittrell to close out Sunday's game. So you got four good starters there. And that'll play in a regional if you're having to get through a loser's bracket or something like that. So they still could be scary. And I think a little bit of it's overblown. I mean, you know, Vanderbilt gets compared against a standard that they created for themselves, right? Winning two national championships. You know, people forget last year that this program was a top eight national seed last year. They just didn't get it done in a regional. Year before, they didn't get out of a regional then, too. So if you're looking at 3 years in a row for this program to not get past the opening round of the NCAA regionals, yeah, I mean, that's clear regression from where they were as kind of the top program in the sport for a long time.
Sorry.
It's all good. Yeah, no, I mean, well – there's so much to get into with that, with the Vanderbilt thing. Like, first of all, they've had a ton of injuries, right? And the key guys this year. And I don't want to make excuses for them, but they got like three or four guys they were counting on that are not there right now. I think a lot of people, Gentry, want to get into the – and look, we had Ben McKee, and he brought up like Dabo Swinney, talking about Tim Corbin, NIL, Portal, et cetera, et cetera. And I understand that. Like, I get the sentiment, but we were talking about this in the press box. Like, NIL and the portal matters, of course, in college baseball. And Tennessee has used it really effectively. But Tennessee, the bulk of their team is still homegrown guys that they've recruited. And that's still what it's about, right? I think the big question, and you and I and Aria Gerson, who does a great job, you know, covering the Vanderbilt Beat for your paper – it's like that. The power hitting, not having enough power hitting, is that like a philosophical shift that Corbin needs? He's had guys in the past. You mentioned Bleday. I mean, Spencer Jones just a couple years ago was mashing the ball. Does he need to have more of those guys? Is it just a matter of maybe too many of those guys they recruit are just going to the draft? You know, all that stuff. Like, where do you think that specifically is with Vanderbilt? Just the lack of power.
Yeah, I mean, it's a factor. You look at the numbers, and clearly it is. I mean, right now, they're all in most hitting categories. They're to the middle bottom part of the SEC. And you know, I don't care who you are and how many titles you've won. If your hitting numbers aren't that great, you're not going to be that good in a conference as difficult as the SEC. But the power is part of it. But as we were talking about yesterday, I feel like that isn't the only part of it. If you look at it, Vanderbilt is a team that's built to station-to-station baseball, singles and doubles, okay. But they're also 13th in the SEC, Gunner, and yesterday in on-base percentage. They're near the bottom of the league in walks taken. You can't be built that way and not be
and
able
not
to
be
get
good
on
at
base.
It
isn't, you know, so, yeah, you'd love a three-run homer every once in a while, but I feel like the problems are deeper than that. I don't think it's just the lack of power, although that is showing itself more this year than I think it has in previous ones. The hitting's been a problem for Vanderbilt now for a couple of years, and I think it's just an overall regression of talent. This is a program that was used to having dudes, you know, the four or five first-round types on these teams, you know, the best players in the country. They don't have that as much anymore. They have good talent, but they don't have exceptional talent anymore. And you know, I think you can build that year to year in terms of, okay, well, this is what our team looks like. But, yeah, if you're going to have a team that can't hit the ball out of the ballpark, you need to get on base. And you know, I feel like it's just they're not hitting as many home runs, but they're just not hitting as well, period, as a team like Tennessee that, to me, at this point, does have exceptional hitting talent.
Gentry, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, you bet. Take care, guys.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessee and our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. We'll react to what he had to say. We'll take your thoughts on the weekend series between Tennessee and Vanderbilt on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Join Cromwell Media along with local athletes and musicians at Hermitage Golf Course on June the 20th for the 615 Open. You can make a difference while supporting Souls for Souls. Every $20 raised goes to a new pair of shoes for a local child experiencing homelessness. Sign up to play or to sponsor at 615open.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday morning. We'll have Corey Curtis from News 2 coming up to begin the 8 o'clock hour. Joe, Tennessee takes 2 of 3 from Vanderbilt over the weekend at Hawkins Field. Vanderbilt does get the 3-0 win yesterday to at least salvage a win in the series. But another series victory for Tennessee. That's, I believe, 8 in a row for them, series victory overall. And they've certainly owned Vanderbilt the last few years under Tony Vitello there. What did you make of what you saw from both squads this weekend? Let's start on the Tennessee front, who was the number one team in the country heading into the weekend. I'm with you. They'll probably keep that. And you saw at different times where that offense could just be such a problem to deal with over the weekend. What did you make of Tennessee, the series win, and how you view this team with the postseason kind of right around the corner here?
Yeah, Tennessee, I actually really thought it was going to happen yesterday too. I mean, Tennessee has not been shut out, so they just got shut out for the first time yesterday, which is pretty stunning, but yesterday, I was like, well, here we go. Same thing. Vanderbilt's in position to win Friday. Bullpen comes in. That Tennessee offense says, yep, thank you. I mean, Kavaris Tears takes a high outside breaking ball and kind of pokes at it and sends it about a million miles the other way for a home run. It's like, what the heck is going on here? And they got power up and down the lineup. Saturday, it was like inevitable. It was just like, well, into the bullpen because – you know, Carter Holton was great Saturday.
Yep.
He was great for Vanderbilt. And Tennessee got in the bullpen. And so I thought it was just going to happen again yesterday. Devin Fettrell, you know, soft tossing lefty, not a guy he basically has always been a starter in his career. So he comes in with 2 on in the 7th. J.D. Thompson was Vanderbilt's best player of the weekend. He was incredible yesterday and saved an NCAA tournament bid with that win. I mean, we'll see where it goes. I think they need to like win more, but they needed that. And if they had been swept, they may have needed to like win the series at Kentucky. Or I don't like that's a big deal. But Fettrell comes in and gives you 3 innings, and that's just clutch performance. You asked about Tennessee. Tennessee is a team that can win it all. They have the goods to win it all. I think A.J. Russell though, and Tony Vitello said this week, I mean, Tony Vitello, I'm going to get this quote that he said, which to me was the most powerful quote he had in the entire weekend in 3 days. A.J. Russell, sophomore, 6'6", right-hander Franklin, said, who's going to fill Russell's shoes? Nobody. I don't know that we'll have another guy like A.J. Russell in our program for quite a while. He has like it's an arm thing, but it's not like, I mean, obviously if it was like something where he's going to need Tommy John or something, then we'd know that.
Yeah.
He's been out since late March. What's realistic for him? You know, come back and all of a sudden just start giving you 7 innings? I don't know about that. But just another arm that could really matter, that might make the difference for them. Ben McKee told it. Like they, 2 of their 3 starting spots right now are just openers who give us 2-3 innings, then we'll get in the bullpen. They have a lot of arms. They've been better overall. By the way, their team ERA is a full point plus lower than Vanderbilt's, so it's good overall, but I do look situationally, and I worry a little bit. And you get into a regional and you lose one of those games, and that's where it can get real problematic when you don't have enough starters. So that said, let me go back to the beginning. Yeah, they can win the whole thing. I mean, they're loaded. They're clutch. Christian Moore is just a fantastic player. I mean, they've got a few guys who are candidates to go in the first round this year. So they're going to be right there, and I think that it's a good – it's, you know, 2 years ago it was so much of like they are the number one team. They are the clear favorite. They must win this thing. No one's beating them. I mean, think about the pitching talent they had on that team compared to this team. It's very different. And frankly, if they come up short this year, and of course we're going to watch Wake Forest with its four or five first-round picks, you know, you might look back and say, man, Chase Burns would have been the difference. And that's possible. But, I mean, they're number one. So, yeah, it's, they're in pretty good shape here.
There's no question about that. On the Vanderbilt front, I agree with Gentry from the standpoint of, like, they've been so dominant for so long. They've been the best program, not only in the SEC, they've been the best program in college baseball, really, like, the last decade. And now the last couple of years here, certainly Tennessee has caught up and passed them. You've got other teams in the SEC that are right there in terms of – I mean, we know this. The talent in the SEC is ridiculous. It's a new landscape of the way of doing things in sports and college sports. So how do you view where Vanderbilt is right now? And what do you think, like, if you had to forecast out here for the program moving forward, can they get back to being that same dominant Vanderbilt? Is the way that Vitello and Tennessee is recruiting in the state, is the way that the conference as a whole is just become this absolute beast of a dominant force? Like, does that hold them back? Like, how do you view where Vanderbilt is in this landscape and where they go from here in terms of getting back to being that perennial national championship contender?
I think if Tim Corbin is in for the fight, then I'm not betting against him right now. You know, a few things about that. And I know Tennessee fans love the idea that the need-based aid, now that NIL has taken that away and now Vanderbilt's, you know, they're going to fade into obscurity. I just really don't buy that. You know, the need-based aid thing was a little bit overblown. With some kids, certainly it made a difference. With a lot of guys who signed with Vanderbilt, they still ended up having to pay more tuition at Vanderbilt than they would have had to pay at, like, Mississippi State, even with the need-based aid. People don't seem to understand, like, this private school and the tuition costs. And also, again, it's need-based. Yeah, there are some players you recruit in college baseball who can qualify for that. There are a lot that don't. So it's just, look, everybody now basically is on full scholarship. If you're a major program in college baseball, you can basically assume everybody's on scholarship now. NIL is going to make up the tuition difference. Okay, so that levels the field to some extent. But, I mean, even with all this going on, Vanderbilt, I think they have, like, the number 9 recruiting class coming in. Now, Tennessee has the number 1 recruiting class. So, if you're going to compare them to Tennessee, yeah, in some way they're chasing them now. It hasn't been – I was talking about this, some of the Vols writers, like, how many guys on this Tennessee team were absolute Vanderbilt targets? And it's still like – they're like, not totally sure. I mean, it's not a lot. They can both – they both recruit nationally. They can both be loaded and coexist. Now, sometimes there are kids like an A.J. Russell or Chase Burns. I think Vanderbilt at one point recruited him. Yeah, there are going to be kids in Tennessee where in the past it was like, well, Vanderbilt wants him. Okay.
Exactly.
Or if not. And now it's like, well, you got to fight Vitello now. So, I mean, that's still a factor for sure. I just – I think if I would just not bet against Tim Corbin. I just wouldn't.
I wouldn't either.
And, you know, we'll see. Gentry's absolutely right. They don't have – their lineup is not scary. The middle of their lineup, frankly, is – you watch it this weekend, it's like this is who I'm used to seeing them bat 8th and 9th for Vanderbilt. It's just like their talent level offensively, some of it is injury-related, but, you know, they've got to get better there without question. They also have some young guys on this team who I think have a chance to develop into pretty good players. So I think it's totally understandable that, one, Tennessee fans are going to say, you are going down the toilet and we are taking over. You should talk that trash. Vanderbilt fans who want to buy that, I'd hit the pause button right now.
It's a little tame this weekend in terms of the rivalry.
Basically, the one thing that happened, J.D. Thompson got suspended recently. By the way, the whole – everybody talking about cheating. There's a Vanderbilt guy. So the Tennessee bats and all that, but, the J.D. Thompson in Florida had something on his arm, got kicked out, got suspended 4 games. So yesterday, clearly, Tennessee guys we're probably talking about whatever was on his arm the whole day, right? Yeah. And so he gave a little, like, touch his arm and gave a little like this, like sticky fingers sign to them. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. But other than that, and then he called them mouthy. This is actually a great quote. And by the way, see, I could have just had the audio ready, but again, I fail, Nick. But let's just let me read this quote to you because it was really fantastic. The word mouthy. I mean, think about the trash that has been talked, right, in some of these games.
Oh yeah.
He said, "Quote, they're a mouthy group. I mean, they're a good group of guys that know how to play some ball. But I mean, just the rivalry aspect. We needed this. We really did. So he started to talk about how mouthy were. Then he's like, oh well, hold on. Coach Corbin's in my head. Do not talk trash.
Tim Corbin peering at him. Over stop talking.
Yeah. So, but mouthy. He got out mouthy. So, but yeah. Think about 2 years ago, especially even last year, there was some screaming and ejections and stuff. It's a little bit more tame. But hopefully next year, that's really what we need. We need both programs to come back and hate each other more next year.
615. Yet another shameless plug from Joe Rexroad.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. More of your thoughts on Tennessee and Vanderbilt for the weekend series. Also give you an update on the NHL and NBA playoffs coming up next as well. A little roundtable here on the program. Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063 the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063 the game. We have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up here in just a few minutes. Corey Curtis from News 2 at 8 o'clock. Right now, I got a pair of tickets to give away to see Bill Burr at Bridgestone Arena this Friday night. Be calling number 5, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Bill Burr at Bridgestone Arena coming up this Friday night. William from Madison on the text line says, the only way Vanderbilt can win is like yesterday. The starting pitching has to be near perfect. It's from William from Madison. It does not seem like, based on the way their offense goes right now, there's zero margin for error. I agree, though, too. Like, if they got to a regional and got in a postseason setting, like, how much could their arms help them there? Like, that to me is the one thing that I'm still holding out hope on if I'm a Vanderbilt fan. If you can find a way to get there, can your pitching kind of carry you through a regional?
Yeah. Yeah, look, if you're one of these hosting teams and Vandy pops up as like the 3, you're not excited about that. You know.
No.
And even with, again, some of these young hitters, like someone pointed out here, and I've lost the text, but they do have some good young hitters who – oh, yeah. Jeff says the 22 MLB draft hurt him a lot. Holcomb, Austin Fort, Kajil. Yep. I'm bad with Kajil. I think I'm saying his name right. Freshman, he's going to be a good player. Get 200 at-bats at the Cape this summer, Vandy will be fine. So there's still talent, too. Like, what if a couple of those guys gets going a little bit along with those arms? Yeah, they could. Like, Vanderbilt at this point, and that's the one thing we talk about the program comparison. Remember, last year, Vanderbilt was flat out a better team than Tennessee all year.
Yep.
Tennessee was about to not make the NCAA tournament. That wouldn't have been like – it wouldn't have killed the program, but it's just an example. Year to year in this sport can really change. Well, Tennessee swept Vanderbilt, flipped it around. Incredible clutchness in the postseason. Gets to Omaha, and Vanderbilt doesn't even get to the Super, even though they were better all year. I mean, the postseason can change things dramatically, so let's see how they both do. One texter says, I don't know if you're about to read this, but the problem for Vandy isn't just Tennessee, Kentucky, yep. Georgia, several schools with way more resources than them decide they want to be good at baseball. Now Vandy can't be the bull of the East anymore. I'll say this, though. Kentucky's a great story this year. Georgia has a couple unbelievable players. And, you know, Georgia's one of those programs where you're sitting there like, are they ever going to – basically, it's like Georgia's like, are they going to get serious about anything other than football? I mean, are they – but –
have they taken some money away from Kirby Smart's like visor fund and put it somewhere else?
But look, the SEC also this year, by the way, LSU's bad and Florida's way disappointing. You know, so the SEC is going to be loaded. They're just going to be loaded. I don't think that the whole idea of schools away more resources than them. Vanderbilt, first of all, they're changing that place. Hawkins Field, I saw some, you know, the mock-ups this weekend. Like, it's going to be really good when they change that. They're in. They're all in on this. They're going to have money that they need for NIL and all this stuff. Like, Vanderbilt has rich people, man. Like, and baseball is their thing. That's what's obviously so tough for them now, to see Tennessee doing what they're doing. But Vanderbilt's not going to, I don't believe it for a second, going to fall behind these other programs in terms of resources. They're just, it's way too important to them.
Joe, on the Stanley Cup playoff front, the Vancouver Canucks, who of course eliminated the Nashville Predators, now up 2-1 in the series against Edmonton. So Edmonton tied it up Friday night, won the game on the road in overtime, tied it up at 1. They go into last night with the matchup advantage, all this other stuff, and you think, all right, well, this is going to be Edmonton kind of running away with this thing. And Vancouver, who is now 4-0 on the road in the Stanley Cup playoffs, does it again. They win 4-3 yesterday, take a 2-1 series lead there. Seeloff's still in net. Demko's taking some more pucks at practice, so maybe by the end of this series, early next series, it would be the time for him to be back. But Vancouver, they're right there, 2-1, up 2-1 against Edmonton, and you talk about some pressure. A lot of pressure on the Oilers right now.
Yeah, you got to respect it. You got to respect Vancouver and what they're doing. It's a good team.
Yep.
They know how to win games, and I agree. Like, the next game, massive pressure on the Oilers. Just massive pressure in general. Massive pressure on Connor McDavid, who's not doing a ton, not doing what you need him to do in this series. I mean, Matthias Ekholm, he's putting the puck in the net.
Is. Three in a row.
For the Oilers. But I think that series has 7-game potential written all over it.
I think it does, too. And, you know, look, Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid. McDavid was awesome in game two. Last night they did a better job of shutting him down.
No shots in game one.
The problem with that is, like, they're playing Draisaitl and McDavid like 27 minutes a night right now. And those two guys are in otherworldly shape. They're two of the best players in the world. But how long can you do that before that has a detrimental effect on them? Like,
that
at some point,
and
the coach
forwards,
was asked about it last night. He's like, yeah, we can't keep doing that. It's like, well, it's one thing to say that, but like when you're
then
down
you get
in the game,
game,
it's like,
right.
Well, we probably need Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on the ice. So it's a very interesting spot that they're in.
You're down a goal, and when you're down a goal in game four,
you need
what are you
going to
be doing? You're not
as much as possible. There's no question about it. The other West series, Dallas up 2-1 on Colorado. So Colorado won the first game there. Dallas has now won 2 in a row, and they were really good on the road the other night. And Wyatt Johnston and Logan Stankoven continue to be awesome, and those two guys are like 22 years old. So that's good to see if you're a Predators fan.
Yep.
Some Dallas stars stepping up big in big moments. On the east side, Florida up 3-1 on Boston, and they are just clearly the better team than Boston. Carolina stays alive after being down 3-0, so that one's 3-1-2. It's looking like we're headed towards a Florida-New York Ranger Eastern Conference Final, which has a chance to be absolutely awesome. Those two teams are great.
Yeah, that would be amazing. You know, I will say, there's a lot of talk. It really is interesting when we talk about team construction, and there's a lot of talk about Carolina, obviously, right?
Yep.
It's like the Leafs, what they do doesn't work, but look at Carolina every year. They're deep but not superstar-laden team. It's not working, right? Not working for them. I will say, I could see them winning this next game and all of a sudden this thing getting really pressurized.
So about Carolina?
Rangers. Yeah.
I mean, you could make the argument of the four games they've played – you can make an argument they've been the better team in three of them.
And special teams has been a disaster.
And the special teams has been a disaster. And they've lost, obviously, three in a row. I mean, they had one at home in game three where they were out shooting the Rangers like 2-1 in the game, and then they lost. I mean, it's that's how it goes in the playoffs sometimes. That's going to be really interesting to see if they can extend it. If they can't, then they're going to have to shake some things up this offseason would be my guess. And a couple of guys that could be interesting trade partners.
Yes.
For the Nashville Predators. We'll see. See what happens on that front. In the NBA front, I am thoroughly enjoying Denver and Minnesota. That one's now evened up at 2. The road team has won every game in that series.
Well, I'm enjoying it, but can we get a great game?
That would be good.
Everybody blows everybody out.
I know.
But, yeah, the last three games are going to be fascinating.
You got Pacers-Knicks tied at 2 as well. It's been a good NBA playoffs to this point. Mavs are up 2-1 on the Thunder. Like, the Celtics, I still think, Cleveland played them really well the first two games on the road. Obviously, they won game two and looked really good doing it. I just think the Celtics are clearly the best team in the East. So, like, they're going to come out of the East here. But the West is very interesting to see where this could go.
Yeah. The Celtics are on the road. They're unstoppable.
Apparently so.
But the Pacers-Knicks series, the Knicks are banged up and, like, Thibodeau plays those dudes 47 minutes or whatever, and it's I think it, like, caught up with them the last game. That's another one. I mean, the last three games of the Nuggets Wild and Knicks Pacers, must-see TV.
No question about it. Rob from Clarksville says the cross-check to the neck of McDavid needs to get Edmonton fired up in Game 4. If they don't respond now, the series is over. He did take one right to the chops last night from Carson Soucy from Vancouver. I'm interested to see if that one gets looked at. But I'm telling you, man, if Edmonton loses Game 4 and they go down 3-1 in that series, you talk about some panic. I mean, it's at some point with those two, Draisaitl and McDavid, it's like, so you ever going to win? You're going to win, make a deep playoff run, win a cup? And their goaltender is falling apart at the seams right now, which is not good.
Might they be interested in a goaltender? Mm-hmm. You know, Draisaitl, Saros, straight up. We saw them all. Yeah. Willie, do you say no? Does Willie say no?
I would hope Willie would say yes to that.
By the way, Willie has now become – Willie's become Stilly. What if we got Willie and Stilly and Willie? I know we Stilly and Pauly, but Stilly and Willie? I'd like to hear a Stilly-Willie debate on the goalie situation.
I would, too.
Willie's he continues to bombard us with information and analysis.
We had a nice group
text. And I'm here for it, baby. I am here for it.
Including some memes that didn't quite – get understood, but it's okay.
Kind of ugly, though. I know. My jokes don't always land.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Ranch. You can check it out every morning here on the program. We'll do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
It's weird. You know, Ackerman had me running around with greased pigs before catching, and I just, it was supposed to be a really important drill, and it didn't seem to help me very much. That's not enough sausage gravy. Come here. Come here. Let's pile it on.
It's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road here on the program. You can check it out every morning.
Do you have just like a pig file for me? Just when I talked about various pork-related things?
No.
Gravy?
Not at all. You said that last week.
I know.
It's one thing.
You just put two pig things together. I'm like,
Keezer's a little spicy this morning. You can tell it.
But those are two different clips, right?
They are.
Two different clips. Look at it. He's a little bit of attitude coming through the microphone.
You just had your bachelor party
this
weekend.
He's got one weekend in Pigeon Forge.
Jeez.
He's mad as hell to be back in here with us.
What do you mean?
And
I'm not
now
mad.
Now he's trying to get a little spicy over there with you.
Sorry to bother you. Go back to doing whatever you're doing, Sudoku or whatever it may be.
I'm not that smart.
Okay. Flip that one up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Clip yourself there. Yeah. All right, today I'm going to talk about Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. I'll tell you a little bit about my Mother's Day.
That was yesterday.
Well, I understand that. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it. For you, it was recover from your bachelor party day. For some of us, it was Mother's Day.
Brought to you by Liquid IV.
Boom.
So, first of all, my wife, Katie, mother of my three children, fantastic mother, and very appreciative of all she does. And about 10 days ago, she just mentioned to me, here's all I want for Mother's Day. I just want to try a new brunch place.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, should I have thought of that prior to her saying that? Yeah. But as soon as she said that, I immediately Googled brunch, Nashville, read all the stuff, got a list. I searched up and down this town for reservations. 10 days out for Mother's Day, it did not go well.
Oh, boy.
Okay? It did not go well. I mean, I basically got on some waiting lists, and then a complication yesterday is I had to cover Vanderbilt, Tennessee, right? So I had to be there at 2, so it's not you could do like a brunch at noon or whatever. So anyway, there were a couple of places that don't take reservations. We were going to try in 12 South, but it's like, nah, just what if it's messed up? And I'm like, well, look, if it gets messed up, we'll go to freaking McDonald's. I mean, come on. Can we not do some sausage McMuffins with egg? But anyway, we had some friends, and they had a reservation, and they were able to add us, and so we got in with them. Boom, perfect, awesome. First of all, I put on a very colorful shirt. It's a very nice Mother's Day shirt. I wore it to the Vanderbilt, Tennessee game, too. Went with nice with my red shorts. Katie said, you look like a clown. Caroline said, you look like Pee Wee Herman, or no, an Easter egg.
Okay.
And Brennan said, what are you wearing, bro? So this is the response I got to my really nice Mother's Day outfit. But whatever. We get there. We show up. We sit down. You know, I order my coffee. Everybody orders beverages, all this stuff. Sitting there for about 20 minutes. It's taking a while. You can tell this place is stretched a little thin. There's lines. I mean, there's a lot of people there. And it's like, boy, the way, you know, the staff looks a little thin today. So it's like, this might be a little bit. So after about 20 minutes or so, finally the waters come. And then it's like, hey, you know, come in with your drinks, all that stuff. And I'm just like, God, I need this coffee. About 10 minutes after that, the waitress, and I don't blame her, but she comes up to the table and says, look, just so you guys know, it's going to be at least an hour and a half before there's any food.
Oh, boy.
And maybe more than that, actually.
Good gracious.
And I'm like, this would have been good information a half hour ago.
Yes, indeed.
And she went on to tell, again, she was busting her butt. I don't blame her. She was in a bad situation, in general, the situation. She said, she told us, a bunch of people called in. It's just amazing, first of all, to me. It's like if you're a restaurant in a situation like this, I guess, one, hire people that aren't going to do this. You've got to be prepared. Like, the people bailing on Mother's Day. Like, yeah. They're can't, like, fire them. Fire them on the spot. And I understand that they'll say, well, we're trying to find good help, and then we'll be short-staffed. But it's like, you can't be put in a situation where a bunch of people call
How many people called out? Good
well,
gracious.
I don't know. I mean, again, what we were told is that it's at least 2 hours until sat down with a reservation until you're going to get food. And I know Pekarski would tell me to call it the place. I'm not going to call it the place. But just please, you know, be prepared for these situations. Yeah. Be prepared. I understand. Sometimes it just happens, right? But, like, you should triple staff the whole situation. Say, guys, no one calls in sick on Mother's Day. I'm sorry. And if you do, then I want to see. You need to show me, like, a specimen, a sample, some kind of. I mean, I need
to
prove
test.
That yeah. You have a serious illness going on. So, basically, with my little Pee Wee Herman Easter egg shirt, I toddled off and had no brunch with anyone. But they went to another place and apparently had a fine time.
That's good.
I went to the Vanderbilt Tennessee press box and had some Hattie B's tenders.
There you go. You know, you don't run into these type of problems at Cracker Barrel. Just saying.
Hey, man, you know, it's funny you bring that up because seriously, we were joking about, yeah, let's go to McDonald's or whatever. That was brought up, and I'm like, that would be good. The problem is they're probably – insanely packed yesterday, right?
They're probably packed.
Every Cracker Barrel? What, you don't know?
I didn't go. No, I tend to, generally speaking, avoid the restaurants on the big holidays.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Again, this was Katie's idea. I would have been happy.
Exactly.
I'd have been happy cooking for her. Apparently, that's, you know, not a good option. It should be.
It should be.
But, yeah, no, that's a good policy in general.
I would love to know. We need like a photo of what you were wearing yesterday so we could really
I know, and I thought about
hash
that.
This out here.
Before I talked about this, I thought about the fact that I didn't take any pictures.
Did you get caught in a video yesterday of like when Corbin or Vitello speaking that we could judge it by?
That's a good question. We can search. We can search. I do feel like Corbin kind of did double take a little bit. Like,
So not only your family, but even Corbin is like, I don't know, Joe. I don't know if that's your best work.
Maybe I could be imagining things, but Mike Wilson really liked my shirt. So
I don't know if that's good or bad either.
I don't know if it is either.
my wife and her mom like had like no plan yesterday in terms of where they wanted to go eat. Now, they lucked out. They went to a place last night where I think they ended up having to wait for like 15 minutes and then got in. But I was like, you're really, really playing with fire here. Like, there's got to be a better planning situation going on here.
I do feel like.
And then she told me to shut up. So yeah, that's what I did.
Good. That's what you do, especially on Mother's Day. I do feel like dinner is at least, right? I mean, brunch
yeah,
is
dinner's
like,
a little, yeah, I think, easy.
You got a better yeah. chance of dinner. Brunch is just, yeah, it's a little much. But again, just if you're not going to, if you can't have a staff prepared, then, like, don't have your, I mean, they had a special brunch menu. It was very yeah. nice. It looked like it would have been awesome. I was going to get the poached eggs on salmon.
Okay.
You know,
did they have any corned beef hash
sauce
for you in there?
They did not. They did not have corned beef hash on the menu. It definitely would have been my go-to. But the menu looked really good. It looked like it would have been good food. I hope some people there ate
enjoyed
food.
Zach in Nashville, our buddy from Football and Other F-Words on the text line, says, the guy having to leech off another person's reservation is telling someone to be prepared. It's hilarious.
Hey, I told you the story. The moment she said, I would not have chosen this, okay? The moment she said, I just want to try a new brunch, I absolutely combed the internet. I put us on waiting lists. It wasn't like I was like Saturday, like, oh, let me just see if there's a reservation. 10 days out. 10 days out.
Waffle
Listen
house.
To me, Zach.
Find a Waffle House.
I would have been fine with that, too.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Coming up next, we will be joined by our friend Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans, ask him our question of the day. What would you constitute as a successful season for Brian Callahan in year one with the Tennessee Titans? More on that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game.